This is the continuation of session 5.
Last thing, and then we'll stop. Emptiness is the master's protector. Okay. It also says, see the deception as being four bodies. To nam kushir gombayi tong ni sung wa lanamit. Jorwa shinden tapki. Chok. Tela. Kutu gong du jang. By the way, those of you reading the Tibetan, the small print is a nice little commentary, and the big print is the original. Okay. Last thing I'll say, and then we'll stop this class. We'll start again in the evening. The first time I ever taught at a Lama Sepa Center, was it Vajapani, mm-hmm. in Northern California, and you know I was kind of nervous. I'd never been there. I didn't know anything about the FPMT. I'd been sitting in this monastery for 20 years. And I got this invitation to go teach. So I'm like, what do you want me to teach? You know, do you want Madhyamika Prasangika, or do you want mind-only school, or would you like six versions of emptiness, or would you like Buddhist logic? And this letter comes back and says, could you teach refuge? You know, and I'm like... You know, I felt like they were dissing me, you know, like, you know, refuge, like, you know, everybody knows refuge. And then I thought, well, let me do it from the textbook. There's a monastic textbook on refuge. It's in Abhisamaya Ankara, and it's this beautiful thing. And it goes into this, it's this long, long, beautiful book on how emptiness is refuge, you know, that the only true... act of taking refuge is to take refuge in emptiness. You see what I mean? And it's very profound, you see? And then I had the greatest time there. It was like, it blew my mind and it blew everybody else's mind. And now when I go, it's 7 people showed up. Now it's like 150 or 200, you know what I mean? And it was the, you know, it was this thing where they start to talk about the emptiness. And then I started to study and I got really into it. And there's a distinction between Buddha and Buddha jewel. Okay? When you go for refuge, you go to refuge in the Buddha jewel. You don't go to refuge in the Buddha. So when you say Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, when you take refuge in the three jewels, it's not the normal Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. It's a special version of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Okay? And the Buddha jewel that you take refuge in is the emptiness of the Buddha, the Dharmakaya, the Svabhavakaya. And then when you take refuge in the Dharma, it's the direct perception of emptiness. It's the Dharma jewel, okay? Not the Dharma, but the Dharma jewel. And the Sangha jewel is any being who has seen emptiness directly. Monk or not, tantrika or not, doesn't matter. Anyone who has seen emptiness directly, man or woman, is the Sangha jewel. When a Buddhist does the most elementary act of worship in Buddhism, and takes refuge in the Buddha jewel, the Dharma jewel, and the Sangha jewel, they're actually taking refuge in emptiness. Okay? In all three cases, it's emptiness. You know? So does that mean when you come up to the altar and say, Sangye la kabsu jiyo, chö la kabsu jiyo, you know, Buddham saranam gacchami, which is the same thing, exactly the same words, okay? What are you doing, you know? Are you supposed to space out and think about emptiness? You know, you're supposed to try to see something black. Like, I think your left eye, look at the Buddha picture, and then your right eye, make it black, you know? And what does it mean to take refuge in emptiness? You know, what does that mean? I'll give you a very concrete act of taking refuge, and then we'll take a break. And you've heard it 1,000 times. And it's a true story. I'm away on a Dharma study at Sarah Monastery. I get a call from my boss. J.C. Penney is going to order this special pendant. It requires like a 12-point diamond in the middle. It has to be J color. It has to be VS quality. And we need 10,000 of them by 2 weeks from now. He was always doing this impossible thing of promising the order an impossible time. 1 week from now, actually, on the day of the order, J.C. Penney artists, which Marie Placide can tell you, because she used to do it, will start drawing this thing on the computer and saying, unbelievable sale, 50% off, best diamond in the universe, as big as a golf ball, limited supplies, only from April 3rd to April 5th, or something like that. You know what I mean? And that will go out to all these newspapers all over the country. They're like Zales, 1,500 different outlets. And the thing will go out, and they'll place it in every major newspaper in the United States, you know. And you don't even have the diamonds yet. You see what I mean? Much less the jewelry. You don't even have the diamonds yet. And this thing has already been advertised in newspapers for a certain date, you know. And I'm in India at the monastery, you know. So I get this phone call in Madagat, which used to be the only telephone within 200 miles. And it's up on a hill like 3 hours away, you know. So I'm like on this ancient phone, you know, and I'm trying to hear him, you know. And he's like, call Israel, call Belgium, get these diamonds in the house by so-and-so. And, you know, so anyway, the bottom line is I didn't do it, okay. And so here we are on Monday, April 3rd. The ads just hit the people's homes, you know what I mean? They're pouring into JCPenney stores. There's nothing to buy. It doesn't even exist yet, you know? And then he gets called on the weekend, I get called in the morning. He comes breaking into the room and he's like furious at me. And he looks like angry, you know, and he's screaming at me, you know, where are these diamonds? I told you, you had to have them here. You told me you'd do it and they're not here, and I'm so embarrassed. It's a $20 million account, which Pelma used to be in charge of. And why are you doing this, you know? And I'm like, sorry. And he's getting angry at me, okay? Now, what's an act of refuge? This is an act of refuge, okay? You don't do it in front of an altar. You don't sit there and pray to a piece of paper that has nice picture on it or something like that. That doesn't do anything for you. Lord Buddha himself can be sitting here and you come up and hold his hand and you'll still die. This happened in his own lifetime. You know, his village was attacked. People came up to him, hid behind his clothing, grabbed him by the physically, and they just got stabbed and killed in his presence. So he can't help you. You see, I mean, you're not taking refuge in some guy. And you're definitely not taking refuge in some piece of paper or some piece of metal on your altar, okay? They can't help you. They can't do anything for you, okay? If the idea is that you take refuge when something's going bad, when something's going wrong. So, I mean, Rangtoki Pungyendu Rewachari Semba Kyamdru Tseni. Definition of taking refuge is you have a problem and you go to somebody to help you, okay? So actually, going to your mom when you have a problem is taking refuge. It's not Buddhist refuge, but it's taking refuge, okay? So, how do you take refuge? When the boss is screaming at you, you immediately take refuge in emptiness, okay? The pen thing. Aha! He's just a bunch of noises and shapes. And a lot of people leave it at that. They say, okay, now you understand, we'll break the class. He's just a bunch of noises. Okay, and you're like, come on, that doesn't help me. I tried that. I understand he's just a bunch of noises, but I still get upset. I still get angry. It still hurts my heart to have him yelling. Can you explain further? Oh, yeah. He's a bunch of noises, and the reason you hear him as negative noises, the reasons you see him attacking you, the reason you feel bad at that moment is because your mind is forcing you to interpret this noises and shapes as someone screaming at you. You see what I mean? Your mind is forcing you to organize these shapes and colors and noises into a screaming boss and hurting you, okay? So really, he's not the one who's creating the situation. It's your mind which is organizing those shapes and colors into an angry person, okay? So how does that help you? I mean, does that make it better? Does that lessen the fact that he's going to cut your Christmas bonus? No. It doesn't do the least thing, okay? You can sit there and imagine that he's colors and shapes, which you knew all along, and it won't help you. You can try to understand his causation. Oh, his mother gave him birth. He's smarter than me, and so he's my boss. That doesn't help you when he's screaming at you. That doesn't do anything, okay? Oh, how about this? My mind is forcing me to see these parts as a yelling boss. Does that help? Not really. I mean, okay, I understand that. I understand that if I didn't have the karma, I wouldn't see him that way. And because I do have the karma, I do see him that way. I understand that. Does that make it better? Not really. You're still going to get your pay cut. So, I mean, functionally, he's still the same. Whether he's coming from his own side, or whether I'm creating him with my karma, it doesn't really matter, does it? You're still going to lose half of your Christmas bonus. He's waiting for an excuse to cut your Christmas bonus. The last 2 months before Christmas are very risky in a big company. You know, you're walking on eggs all the time. You know, you're trying not to mess up. You know, because immediately it'll be a reason why you shouldn't get this Christmas bonus, you know. And everyone's like, trying to be good. So here's how you really take refuge, and here's why the emptiness helps. And that's why this book says emptiness is the real protector. Is in the reaction. You see, I mean, you have a choice. How are you going to act back to him? Are you going to yell back or not? Okay? If you understand that these parts are being organized into a yelling boss because I had karma from my past from yelling at somebody, then what's the last thing you'd want to do? Definitely wouldn't want to say anything back to him. Why? Because you don't like him. You don't want to see him again. Okay? It's very simple. In the American post office, how do you get rid of bosses? You shoot them. Okay? No, they don't allow guns anywhere near post office because all these guys are ex-Vietnam veterans. They all know how to shoot a gun really well. And really, they shoot people all the time. It's amazing. You know, I always tell my friends at the post office, you don't have to do that. It's dangerous. You could get arrested. Just stop responding to them with violence. Okay? Stop being negative to this boss, and he'll go away. Because the reason you're perceiving him is a karma that you put in your mind the last time you yelled at somebody. So just stop it. Why? Because it's the right thing to do? No. Because it's the moral thing to do? No. Because His Holiness said to do it? No. Because the government or your church or your principal or your first grade teacher or your parents told you to do it? Not at all. Very cold, calculating logic. If I refuse to collect this karma again, I can get rid of this guy. You know? Get rid of enough of them and you're in a Buddha paradise surrounded by 10th level bodhisattvas. And ain't that the goal of Buddhism? See what I mean? That eliminating the yelling boss is the first step in a journey that ends in a tantric paradise. Okay? It's just the first cleaning up of your paradise. Okay? It's eliminating the most obvious forms of suffering like a boss. Okay? And you do it. And it works. Okay? If you work in a large company, I worked in a company with 800 people in the building. And I think towards the end of my practice there, which is why my Lama forced me to go to work, I can say that I think I was on good terms with every single person there, you know. And we still see each other. I was in Bombay a couple days ago, and we're sitting there crying. Me and some of the diamond dealers there, because we know we're not going to see each other for a while. And that's how it ended. You see what I mean? And then that's just a short jump to a Buddha paradise. You see what I mean? But it only works if you understand the emptiness of these people and you stop responding badly because you understand emptiness. And that's why emptiness is a real protector, and that's an act of refuge. Okay? Your refuge vows say that you're supposed to take refuge what? How many times? 3 times a day, 3 times at night. Okay? If you're surrounded by at least 6 people, you'll be taking refuge at least 6 times a day. Okay? No problem. You see what I mean? At least 6 problems will come up. And then you protect your own rear end by not responding negatively because you understand emptiness. You see what I mean? Then you've just taken a real act of refuge. Refuge has nothing to do with bowing down in front of some piece of paper and reciting Gachami, you know, okay. I'm not making fun of Gachami. I love it. It was profound. I was at Shravasti and these monks were reciting it and they taught me how to recite it. It was very beautiful. But anyway.
Is there, what's the difference between the Buddha jewel and the emptiness of your own body and mind?
What's the difference between the Buddha jewel and the emptiness of your own body and mind? Technically, okay, just very technically. The emptiness of your own body and mind is your Sugata Garbha. It's your Buddha nature. Okay, the fact that you could have seen, I always think of I could have had a V8, you know, you could have seen this cylinder as Manjushri's arm if you had better karma because it's empty, okay? So in a sense, the emptiness of your arm and of your own mind is your potential to become an enlightened being, and we call that your Buddha nature. That's called your Buddha nature. It doesn't mean you're already a Buddha and you don't know it or something like that. It just means that your condition by nature is that you're empty. Every part of you is empty. It could have been anything else if your karma had been different. You would be seeing the same object in a different way. Okay? So that's your Buddha nature. When you take refuge in the Buddha jewel, you're taking refuge, technically speaking, in the Buddha nature of a person who's already an enlightened being, in their emptiness. Okay, that's all.
Qualitatively, to
not. Yeah, no. Qualitatively, 100% the lack of an arm that's coming from its own side. That's all. Qualitatively, the same thing. And in technically, when you debate it in the monastery, it's simply a difference in the thing which owns the emptiness. Okay, it's just a difference in the thing which is being empty at that moment. Okay, the Buddha jewel is the emptiness that belongs to a being who's already enlightened, and your Buddha nature is the emptiness of your samsaric body and mind. Okay, that's just so. Are they both 100% emptiness? Yeah. Qualitatively, are they exactly the same? Yeah. It's just that one belongs to a screwed up normal human being, and the other one belongs to an enlightened being. That's all. They're hanging off of separate objects. That's all. Yeah. Last question.
Just speaking about impatience or annoyance with yourself as a
people seem to have this idea, and I don't know where it comes from, that violence done to yourself is somehow better than violence done to others. For example, people ask me about suicide. In Buddhism, suicide is just straight out murder, and a very, very, very serious kind of murder, because you are voluntarily destroying something that could have turned into a tantric deity in this lifetime. You see, I mean, it's like considered much worse than going to Bodh Gaya and blowing up the stupa there, you know, because you are consciously and knowingly destroying something that could have turned into the next Manjushri. You see what I mean? And that applies to being upset with yourself or hard on yourself or angry with yourself or things like that. It's not better just because it's aimed at you. It's also a bad karma. If it's like some kind of dharma frustration, you know, like I wish I could meditate better, or, you know, if it doesn't pass into anger, it's okay. It's a virtue, in a sense. I guess you can judge its karmic repercussions on, does it inspire you or does it depress you? Okay, you know, if it inspires you to be a better person or to practice better or something like that, I would say it's a good karma. If it inspires you to be more depressed and miss more meditation sessions and, you know, feel guilty all the time, then it's not productive and it's probably a bad karma. How's that? Okay, we'll do some prayers. Okay.
Yeah, pa, yon, pa, me, pa, yon, con, me. so we shall visit our good and good
This is the end of session 5. Session 6.
O Sajibuki, Jushin Medo, Dramari Ramlingji,
Okay. I'm going to read the next part. This is the fourth of the seven parts. Okay, we've done 5 and we've done the first 3. We still got to do 4, 6, and 7. So tonight we'll do 4. And then afternoon class tomorrow we'll do 6 and 7. I'll read it. Megang Nimbo, Dodi Pa. What do you got? Tok Nga Da Dan Jawa Cha. Techen Poe Dangang Ni. Tok Nga Ni Chulam Che. Okay. In English, the brief essentials of the instruction are combined within 5 powers. In the great way, these same 5 are the advices for sending your mind. Cherish the act. So we're going to start out. This is category is called a summary of an entire lifetime of practice. Okay, and it starts out as an innocent guideline for your daily practice. How to, you know, you now have a weekly schedule, and it's a very sweet thing. You can follow it for a couple, 3-4 months, and then shift off to something else. But I think it's very useful to try to do this weekly schedule for maybe 3-4 months. At this point in the text, they're talking about how to structure one day's practice, the important elements that you need in one day's practice. Then suddenly he goes off in this thing called Poa. Okay, Poa is a special practice called sending your consciousness. And it's a secret instruction in the tantras for, you know, it's a complicated story, it's a long story. If you do certain checks about your life, and there are special ways of checking certain energies in your life, and if you come to the conclusion that you're going to die suddenly or quickly before you can finish everything, then there's a special practice you can do to send your consciousness to its next life. Okay, and it's very popular in some traditions. They talk a lot about it, and they also seem to imply that you could send someone else's mind away for them, and you know, that you sitting at the side of a dead person, a dying person, could like catch their mind and send it to some beautiful place or something like that. If it was that easy, we wouldn't be here. Okay, we are in the desire realm. We are suffering. Everything bad about your life is bad. Everything good about your life is going to end shortly. And if it was as easy as sitting in a chair next to some dying person and do poa on them, then don't believe that the Buddhas wouldn't have done it already and we wouldn't be here. Okay, so it's not that easy. It's a very, very difficult practice and very rare, and it's much, much better to take care of everything now. You know what I mean? While you're alive and healthy. You know, do your practice, understand the emptiness of this particular cylinder, keep your vows very sweetly, purely, happily, and then turn this into Manjushri or Tara's arm before you get old or sick or almost dead or something like that. I mean, I don't even like to teach my students poa. I think it's inauspicious. Inauspicious? I think it's just bad luck, you know? It's like saying you are going to die or something like that. And I don't want to see anybody die. I don't think anyone has to do it. And, you know, we're all fairly young. We're still running okay, except for the ones who are down in their beds. And, you know, there's no reason why anyone here has to go through that. If you're quite certain, you know, we know the score. We know what's ahead of us. And you know you have to try to pull it off, and you know how to do it, and you just have to do it, okay? And I don't like to waste time talking about something that's not going to happen, okay? Anyway, we'll talk a little bit about it, all right? Okay, so it says the five powers. The brief essentials of the instruction are combined within five powers. Now, some of you in Kathmandu or Bodh Gaya, you had the four powers, which are how to clean up your old bad karma. Five powers is a whole different thing, okay? It's the same word. Top means power. And I'll write the word up here, okay? By the way, somebody asked me if I could lead a Tonglen meditation. And my official representative, Winston, he's got to be the best because I'm trusting him to do the Ireland teachings. He's going to do a Tonglen meditation. If it's possible, Namgyala here tomorrow at 10:30. Okay, I think better in the shade. Yeah, because then everybody's sleepy in the afternoon if you let them get sunburned. Okay, so it'll be 10:30 here, and he'll go through the proper how to do a Tonglen meditation properly. Okay, I've already made another commitment. We have several. I always have a couple classes in the morning, and that's with the people who are going into 3-year retreat. So, and we're kind of on a tight schedule to make it to the end of their training. They've been training for about 2 years now. And Tob means power, Nga means five powers. Okay, now I'll give you the first one. Say Pemba.
Pemba.
Pemba. Pemba means to, it's like a daily resolution. Daily resolution. Literally, Pemba means to shoot something, like Da Pen means to shoot an arrow or throw a spear, and Dapen Lopen means a archery master, you know, acharya of Dapen. You see what I mean? And you remember that this section is how to do your daily practice. So it can apply no matter which day in the week you're in. You know, it doesn't matter if you're on Saturday and you're doing your emptiness meditation, or if it's Sunday and you're doing your Foundation Day, or it's Monday and you're doing your Compassion Day, or we didn't talk about Thursday yet, which is, or did we? I think it's Good Karma Day. I'm not sure. Okay, anyway.
Good Karma Day.
Good Karma Day. Alright. Thursday is, I always used to like Thursday because every Friday in my college we would get drunk or smoke marijuana. And then we started doing it on Thursday too. So Thursday was always a special day. Okay. It's like getting out of school. Of course, I haven't done that in 30 years. But, and I don't suggest it. It's a bad habit. Okay, but anyway. Pemba means when you wake up in the morning, again, on top of your quick death meditation, which is what? I'm going to die at 6 o'clock today. What should I do? Okay. Pemba means setting the tone for the whole day. Okay, set the tone for the whole day. It's good to do it before you open your eyes even. I like to run through maybe half an hour to an hour of meditation before I get up, you know. I mean, people may think I'm sleeping. Of course I'm not. Anyway, you're just laying there. And you know how it's kind of cool to stay in bed, especially if it's a book guy and it's freezing outside. And you just lay there with your eyes closed and you think sweet thoughts, you know, and it's a great way to start the day. You know what I mean? It's a really nice way to start the day. You don't know how important it is to, before you get out of bed, that you have these sweet thoughts. And it's very, very useful. So you decide you're going to die at 6 o'clock, which is not such a sweet thought, right? And then you say, now what's important today? And the main job for any person who's doing Lojong is to crush their number one mental affliction, which in the Lojong is what? Yeah, worrying about yourself first. And this is so easy because we have so much to go. You know what I mean? Since I haven't really started yet, anything I can do, like if I just give another person the tea first or do one nice thing that another person might like, then I'm already doubled my net time that I think about other people. I mean, what I mean to say is we have a lot of progress to make. So it's not much effort. You sit there for 2 minutes and think about what somebody else might like today. You know what I mean? Like, okay, 2 o'clock, I might meet this person. Probably they'd like this. And then get up. Okay? That's called Pemba. Pemba means set the tone for the day. I want to smash or starve my tendency to take care of myself first. I will make one symbolic act today. You know? I'll have Coke instead of Pepsi because so and so likes it. You know what I mean? Or just something like that. Okay, something concrete. Start out in the morning, just to spit in the face of my tendency to take care of myself first. You know, you're not going to run my day. I'm going to run my day, and my day is going to start out by thinking about somebody else. Okay. Rang Chenzin Guba Tam Cheki Go means, this is a very famous line, all of your problems come from your tendency to take care of yourself first. All of them. So, first thing in the morning, I don't like that way of thinking. I reject that way of thinking. Even before my feet hit the ground, I've already decided I'm not going to live that way today. Okay? That's very consistent with deciding you're going to die at 6 o'clock. Because that's what you should be doing till 6 o'clock. See what I mean? That's the most valuable thing you can do until 6 o'clock. Okay. Second one. Say Komba. Komba. Those of you who are trying to learn Tibetan, the word meditation in Tibetan is Gomba. Gomba. And this is Komba. You see, because there's Komba, Komba, Gomba, Komba, Ngomba, and Ngomba. And they all mean different things. Okay, that's the problem when you learn Tibetan. Is ka, 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 ga, nga, and nga. Okay, there's like 5, 6 of them. Okay, you take off the hardness of the sound, and it becomes komba. This is komba. Komba means to get used to something. Okay, to get habituated to something. To get used to something. And this is a trick, okay? I call it transitioning. Okay? Transitioning from one state to another. And in scripture, what it means is, you know, if you think about your day, you transition through activities maybe 10, 20 times a day. You see, when we finish this first half of the class, you'll all get up. Like, you'll transition from the chair to standing, and then you'll go do something, and then you'll transition from doing something and you'll sit back down on the chair. And this is a method of raising your awareness during the entire day. Get used to transitioning properly, okay? Like when you change your activities during the day. So, you know, my day is like get up, wash, meditate, study, class, okay? And, you know, meditate, go to sleep, something like that. So I've transitioned like 15, 20 times during the day. Now, what happens with normal people is that when you transition, you lose your awareness. You see what I mean? When you're sitting there listening to a class and your mind is on something virtuous, most of the class, and then the minute you move your body to standing and walking, you lose it. You see what I mean? When your body transitions, your mind transitions. And usually your mind goes from concentrating on something to concentrating on nothing. You see what I mean? So the trick with number two, komba, which is habituating yourself to the idea, is that every time you move positions, every time you go from sitting to standing every time you go from the kitchen to the living room, every time you move from the living room to the bathroom, every time you come into meditation, every time you go out of meditation, you think about crushing your habit of taking care of yourself first. You get up and you say, what can I do for somebody else right now? You see what I mean? You use the transition as an excuse to think about what you pembad. You see what you decided to do in the morning. And it's beautiful. It is a very, very profound practice. There's this very famous line in sutra, the Buddha never walks, the Buddha never sits, the Buddha never stands, the Buddha never goes, the Buddha never comes. The meaning is, the Buddha is aware during all the transitions. You see what I mean? Every time you transition. If you're keeping a book, the transition time is really good for that. Like, before every major activity of the day, meaning before meditation, before a class, before I eat my Cheerios, I always do a book. You see what I mean? And I just link it to changes in the day. I link it to starting a new activity. And now, in this Lojong, if you're going to be a serious Lojonger, okay, then you just get in the habit that when you move positions, when you go from sitting to walking, you say, what can I do to help somebody right now? You know, what can I do to stop my tendency to be selfish? And this is a very, very holy, sacred, powerful way to change your tendency to think of yourself all the time first. You see, normally your awareness drops when you move positions until you get settled into your next position. And the trick here is that during the transitions, you remind yourself of what you're doing today, you know, what's important in your life. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. You know, in the highest levels of Tantra, actually the next to the highest level of Tantra, you're actually trying to maintain a certain vision all the time. Kirim. Okay? And it's very powerful if you start now. It's very powerful if you start every time you change positions, every time you move to a new room, every time you move to a new activity, you remind yourself, that's what I'm here for today. You know, I'm here today to get rid of my selfish mind that caused me trouble my whole life. Okay? And like that. And just remind yourself. Just get up and say, what can I do for somebody else right now? You know, who's walking around that I can help? Sit down. Or who's sitting around here that I can help? Go to the kitchen. Who's sitting around here that I can make a cup of tea? Go back to your bedroom. You know, who's around here that I could help out? You know, get on the telephone. Who could I call that I could help? You see what I mean? And every time you move, you think of a new idea of someone to help. Okay? That's very, very powerful. The net effect is that you move quickly into a tantric perception of the world. Okay? Number three. Say, Karpo. Seven. Karpo. Seven. Karpo means white. White, the color white. And Saban means seeds. Okay, white seeds. And this is a special practice. It has two parts. We call Soksak Dipjang. Say Soksak
Dipjang.
Soksak Dipjang. I don't know if you know the story. There was this guy. He was really, really stupid. I think he was the most stupid guy in Bihar in 500 BC. And he was so stupid that his own family threw him out. He's the father of the family, and they threw him out. And he ended up at Buddha's doorstep and said, you know, I want to become a monk because nobody else will take me, you know. And Ananda had the job of screening people, like protecting Buddha from too many people. Like, this thing's been going on a long time. If you go to Shravasti, Ananda's cottage is right in front of the Buddha's cottage. And they say that he used to guard the door to keep admirers from bothering Buddha all night, you know. And then at night he would actually walk around the Buddha's house to fend off people trying to jump into the courtyard to talk to Buddha, you know. So anyway, the Buddha's disciples used to sit at the door, and somebody would come in and say, I'd like to join this group, this crazy group wandering around India on foot with no money, talking about emptiness and karma all the time, you know. And so they'd say, okay, we got to check you out. And the method was to get, I think it was Shariputra, to read the guy's mind, you know, and see if he's got any potential at all. You know, so they'd bring him in and they'd put him in front of Shariputra. Now this guy, he got in there, you know, and I think he's called, I don't remember his name. Anyway, Bajin. And he came in and he you know, looks in his eyes and he, you know, and then he gets up and he says, hopeless. There's not a single iota of aptitude in this guy. You know, cannot become a monk. You know, it's impossible. Cannot join this gang wandering around India without any money, talking about karma and emptiness. Okay, and then Buddha goes from the inside room. I saw the inside room in Travesty. It's very cool. You know, he used to hang out in this inner room, and he's like, you know, and they come in, they say, what? They said, you made a mistake. You know, this guy has potential. And they said, impossible, I read his mind, there's nothing there. He said, yeah, it's not direct, it's hidden. It's, you know, and they said, this is the story of the guy, the fly,
yeah,
who landed on the cow pie a million years before, and there was a big rainstorm, and the cow pie came down the hill and floated around a stupa. And so the fly actually did one circumambulation by accident of the stupa, and that's the only seed in this guy's mind. That's the only thing he's got. You know, and Buddha says, you know, properly cared for, this seed could grow into something. And then he uses a word which means, dois sepke rube nashim, means like the bones of a frog in the middle of a granite boulder. And this was, you know, in ancient India, when they split a big rock and there were prehistoric fossils in there, you know, that's a reference to that. So so anyway, Buddha said, I'll give you something to memorize, you know, and he gave him this thing, Soksak Jipjang, okay, Soksak Jipjang, Jipjang Soksak, sorry, Jipjang Soksak. And then so the guy goes, Jipjang, Buddha says, great, now say Soksak, he goes, Soksak. He says, now do it again. He says, Soksak. No, do the whole thing. He says, I don't remember the first part. You know, he says, Dipjang. He says, oh, you Dipjang. Okay, now do the whole thing. Dipjang. He says, no, do the whole thing. He's like, what whole thing? He says, you forgot the second part. Oh, yeah, this is the second part. Dipjang. No, Soksak. You know, he says, Soksak. Now do the whole thing. Soksak. You know, and he's so stupid, he couldn't, you know. So Buddha's like, very patient, right? He said, okay, look, here's a broom. You know, take this, you know those little kusha grass brooms? He says, take this broom, go in the temple, and say to yourself, Dipjang Soksak. And if you can't remember the whole thing, just say Dipjang in the morning and say Soksak in the evening, okay? And then later, try to see if you can get up to Dipjang Soksak. See if you can memorize four syllables instead of just two. You know, and so he started doing it. You know, and then after a while, he got it down, you know, Soksak, Dipjang, you know, and Soksak means to clean away your old bad karma. And, sorry, Soksak means to collect new good karma. And then Dipjang means clean away your old bad karma. You know, so, you know, after like 6 months, Buddha calls the guy back and says, you got it? He says, yeah, Soksak, Dipjang. Now I'll teach you what it means. He says, oh, okay. You know when you were sweeping the temple? Yeah, he said, yeah, I remember. He says, well, when you sweep the stuff into the corner and get it all out, that's like cleaning away your bad karma. And then when you got everything piled up in the corner, that's like collecting all this good karma. So you got it? He says, yeah, I'm cleaning away my bad karma. He says, yeah, and the second part. He says, what second part? Anyway, you get the point. After a while, he really got it down, you know? Like, he's sweeping the temple, but he's going, aha, Dipjang, I'm cleaning out my own bad karma. Soksak, I'm piling up good karma, you know? He later became an arhat in that lifetime. He saw emptiness directly, Arya, and then he went on to remove his mental afflictions, just because of his faith in the Buddha, okay? So, anybody can do it, right? And if you think about it, you only have two jobs in your life, okay? If the pen thing is true, you know, if this is just a green cylinder and your karma is forcing you to see it as a pen, and the dog's karma is forcing them to see it as something to chew on, and if that's in fact what makes the dog a dog, and if that's in fact what makes a human, then in theory your arm could become Tara's arm. Golden arm, or green. I like the gold one. Or white, actually. I like the white one. And it's just that's the emptiness of your arm. Forget everything else you ever heard. It's irrelevant, isn't it? Who cares if you're a bunch of dots? Who cares if you came from causes? Those are lower interpretations of emptiness, okay? This just means your arm is a cylinder, your mind is forcing you under the influence of your past karma to see it as a hand, and when that karma wears out, this thing will stop moving and we'll call you dead. And you will be dead, okay? Then your karma will shift again and you'll see it as a paw or something else. And of course you won't remember your past because you're a different being now. You see, I mean, you look at this stick and you'll want to chew on it. You're not going to say, oh, that's the thing I used to write with. Now I want to chew on it. No, your mind just shifts and you're not even aware of it. You are the other being. You are that now. You see, I mean, it's not like you can remember stuff very well or things like that. It just changes. It just shifts. And then you're a dog on the Goa beach instead of being a person in the hotel room. You see what I mean? And it's true of this thing also. Okay, so really, once you understand this principle, there's only two things left to do in your life. One, collect the most powerful karma you can. You know? Big time, powerful karma, fast. Second, get rid of your old bad karma. You see what I mean? Those are the only two jobs you have in the rest of your life. Once you understand emptiness, then how do I shift that perception? How do I manipulate those perceptions? Collect good karma, soksat, and get rid of your old bad karma, dipjang. We're going to cover both of them right now. They are two of the days in your schedule. Okay, what days? I think Thursday. What day is purification day?
Wednesday
is purification day? And then Thursday is good karma day. Okay? So we're going to go over that right now. Then you have a whole week's practice, I think. Pretty much set. Okay. Your karma's almost finished on the ink perception. Okay? By the way, here's a hard sutra type of question. Okay? Tomani suso, sule tomani shemayin. Tomani lekyan su shemayin. Deshidu tawada, dushidu dujidu namashifinam. Tombao. Did this pen run out of ink? Is this pen about to run out of ink? If you're really a karma and emptiness person. Huh? Is this about to run out of ink? No, for anybody, for her. It's down to here, okay, I can see it's right here. No, what's the proper way to say it? My karma to perceive ink in that cylinder is about to end. Okay? And that's how everything in the world works. You don't collect virtue. You don't change your mind. You don't have mental training, Lo Jong. Okay? You change your karma, and then you perceive your mind differently. Okay? Lo Jong doesn't improve your mind. Okay? It improves your karma, which improves your perception of your mind, which is the same thing as improving your mind. So why go through this whole exercise? If you don't understand how things work, you won't be able to do it very well. Okay? That's... Once you understand, you can pull this off faster, this tantra stuff. Okay, here we go. Let's do the easy part first. Thursday is good karma day. The cheapest, cleanest, easiest, lazy man's way to collect good karma is rejoicing. Okay? So like, Sunday you had an option. One of the three meditations could have been rejoicing. Thursday is just cheap, clean, good karma day. Okay? Lama Yeshe used to say, it's one of the teachings he gave that I most admire. He said, somebody said, I work in an office, I fight the traffic in LA, I get home at 7, 8 o'clock, I'm a wreck. And I know this, I mean, I did this for 15 years, you know. Frankly, Lama, I can't meditate, it's not going to work, I can't do that. So Lama Yeshe said, okay, make yourself a coffee, put lots of sugar in it, you know, lay down on the couch, prop your head up, drink the coffee, and think that you'd like to help all living beings. For half an hour, 45 minutes, just sit there, space, zone out, and think I'd like to help living beings. Okay. And my Lama also taught very, very, very often that the easiest way to collect good karma is just to sit there and be happy about all the good things you're doing. You know, say, today I had a good Dharma day. You know, every time I stood up, I thought about helping somebody else. Every time I sat down, I thought about somebody else. Every time, before I woke up in the morning and before I put my legs off the bed, I thought, now what can I do today to help somebody else? What can I do to lower my tendency to think about myself first? I had a really good day, you know. I got mad, how many times was it? 4 times today. But there was that one time that I shut my mouth and didn't get angry, you know. I did succeed once today. I'm doing pretty good, you know. I rejoice. I'm happy. And that's all. You just sit there in your deep meditation posture after your preliminaries and you say, you know, in the last week, I can remember like 6 times when I didn't say what I wanted to say to the person who irritates me the most, you know, and I'm doing pretty good. The score used to be 6-0, and now it's 6-2, and that's not so bad for a person who's been here a zillion years, you know, at the mercy of their mental afflictions. You know, I'm doing pretty good, and be happy, and rejoice in all the good things you're doing, okay? Then the cheapest, most efficient way to collect good karma. All the scriptures say that if you're happy about the good karma being collected by a great lama or by a great saint, Mother Teresa, you know, anybody, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Lama Sherpa, Ken Rinpoche, you know, think of a great lama, think of a great being. It could be somebody in your office. You know, I have a guy, you know, DS, and just extraordinary, virtuous person, you know, working next to me in the diamond business, and you just think of them and say, I'm just really happy about how good they are. You know, I'm really happy that there's some crazy guy who's just a normal guy that they chose at 2 years old, who won the Nobel Peace Prize by coincidence, I'm sure, who's wandering around the world teaching people how to be happy. And, you know, I'm glad. I'm glad there's a guy like that. You know, I'm happy for him. I'm happy for everybody he ever talks to. All the scriptures say that you collect 10% of the Dalai Lama's karma. If you compare 10% of the Dalai Lama's karma to 100% of your own karma, it's probably it's a lot better deal to be happy about the Dalai Lama's karma. So they say, they say do both. Be happy that the rejoice in what the Dalai Lama's doing, or Lama Sherpa. You know, if you get close to seeing all the things he's doing, you can't imagine it. You just can't imagine it. You know, like I go from country to country, center to center. I see all the things he's done, and it's just awesome. It's unbelievable. You know, one lama helping tens of thousands of Western people learn Buddhism. You know, one lama, his whole life. You know, and there's all these myths about him. He doesn't sleep. He takes off his shirt and lets the mosquitoes eat him all night. And I'm like, yeah, right. You know, and then I get this call, you know, you have an appointment with Lama Sherpa at 6 p.m. I said, okay. So at 6 p.m. they come in and say, it's been moved to 8 p.m. All right. 8 p.m. they come in, it's been moved to 10 p.m. Oh, okay. They come in, you know, here's Brian. It's going to be 3 a.m., guess you might. I'm like, are you for real? Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, you get first-hand confirmation. You know, he really doesn't sleep. I met his teacher, and he said, I said, this sleep thing, is that for real? You know, and he says, I'll tell you something. He was at Boxar Refugee Camp, and he was like 12 years old or 10 years old, and we'd tell him to go to bed. And and so out of politeness to his lamas, he would lay down, you know. And then we'd go away, and then, you know, we'd come back in half an hour, and he'd be up studying something, and all the other kids are asleep, you know. And he'd do that all night long, and we couldn't get him to go to bed, you know. And, you know, and rejoice, just to be happy that there's a person like that, you know. Say, that's wonderful, you know. And you get 10% of that. It's like an hour and a half a night or something, okay, of what he's up to. And it's all great stuff, you know. It's all amazing stuff. So just that one human being would care that much about a bunch of crazy Westerners, you know, to go through all that trouble. And believe me, it's not easy, you know. I mean, if all he had to do was do all his projects, that's one thing. But to deal with all of us on top of that is different, you know. It's more difficult. So just be happy. And that's Thursday, okay? Cheap. Good karma. On top of that, it'd be really nice if you learned how to do a book, okay? And I think we'll do that tomorrow about, what's it, when time's class? 3? Anybody from New York want to volunteer for 1:30? How's 1:30? Okay. What time does the food come?
Lunch?
Yeah.
12:30?
It's supposed to be 12 to 1, but...
Okay. Do they... everybody have to eat in the same place, or can they bring the food up here?
They can bring food up here.
Okay. I suggest you bring your lunch here, eat together. People from New York. Anybody volunteer? There's Anne. Yeah. Okay. There's like 3-4 people. 5 people. There's a way of tracking your vows, tracking your good karma all day in a special little book, and we don't have time to go over it, but they'll be here at lunch tomorrow, okay? And just come. If one person comes, it's worth it, okay? And come 12 o'clock, bring your lunch up here, and they'll teach you how to do the book thing. So Winston's got you from 10:30 to 11:30, and then you get PP time, and then come and learn how to do your book. It's really amazing. It's how to collect good karma, heavy duty, yeah.
What's the specific result of
your person? How do you mean? Oh, what's the karma? That's a good question.
Do you see more of it? Do you see more stuff to rejoice?
Yeah, you do. But I think it would be the opposite of number 8.
Jealousy.
You see? Yeah, it's the opposite of jealousy. You know, I think mainly it's that you get some kind of happiness. Your peace of mind. Peace of mind. Like that. Okay. Okay. So that's the pure white seeds divide into sok sok, collecting good karma, and then dipjang. Dipjang means getting rid of your old bad karma. Okay, there's 4 steps. I'm going to do them very fast. It's in detail in your weekly schedule. Okay, it's in more detail. These are 4 steps for removing old bad karma. So it's not enough that for the rest of your life you're happy and being good to other people, because you don't know how much very terrible old karma you have in your heart. Okay, there's a very famous example in scripture of King Udayana. King Udayana is the person for whom the Wheel of Life painting was first painted by Lord Buddha. And upon seeing it, that evening he went into the direct perception of emptiness. Okay, and then after that he was murdered. Okay, by his own son. And that's an example of, you know, you can be collecting extremely good karma, even someone who sees emptiness directly, but you can still have all these really bad old karmas in your mind. So you have to try to get them out. And here's a short method for how to get them out. Okay. It's 4 steps, 4-step method to get rid of old bad karma. For example, if you had an abortion in the past, and I'm counting the boys too, okay? You get 100% of the karma if the lady gets an abortion and you support it, okay? So this is a very common karma that I've noticed in the West. You know, I myself was involved in such a thing. So it's a very, very heavy bad karma. It's one that you maybe didn't know about when you did it. You weren't a Buddhist yet, you didn't believe that thing was alive, now you know it was alive, and you have this incredibly bad karma. It didn't ripen yet, or you might be dead already, okay? Or have very bad health, okay? So the first step is to think about bodhicitta and refuge. Bodhicitta means this whole subject we've been studying, okay? And you sit for a while and you think about, you know, if I keep up that kind of negative behavior, I can't help anybody. You know, I'm just letting everybody else down, okay? That's one thought you can think about. You know, if I don't clean up my act, then really I'm letting down a lot of, I could help a lot of people, but I'm not getting there if I keep being bad. Okay. Then refuge, we talked about it. Specifically, think about doing the opposite of your normal reaction to all the bad things that happen to you. Like if you get in a traffic jam, instead of feeling angry, you think about why this is caused. If someone's speaking something to you unkindly, bad, then you think about, it must have been caused by my speaking badly, so today I'm going to speak very sweetly to other people. That's taking refuge, okay? So you just review those things in your mind. It's mainly the emptiness thing, about the boss yelling at me about the JCPenney, okay? Number 2. Number 2 is regret, not guilt. Okay, there's no word in Buddhist literature for feeling guilty. Okay, the word is regret. Regret means after you've studied the pen thing, after you've studied the thing about karma, you know that karma is responsible for every perception you have. Do you know how much karma it takes to keep the Indian Ocean so sweet in the evening? You know how much karma it takes to see all those flashes on the ocean? Imagine. You see, each one of the flashes that you see on the ocean around 3 o'clock is being maintained by 65 karmic ripenings per second. Each of the flashes on the ocean. You see, each glint of sunlight that you see when you look at the ocean and you see thousands or tens of thousands of glints as the water moves, each one of those glints, to maintain it, if it's a pleasant perception for you, for a second, takes 65 discrete karmas. Looking at the ocean from a Goa hotel is extremely expensive. But if you don't decide that you're going to avoid that kind of thing in the future, it just doesn't work. Okay? It will not work. Okay? And you know the oral lineage tradition at this point. They say, don't add a new bad karma to the old one. Which means, set a time limit. Okay? Like, if it's anger at someone that you live with or something like that, then say, I won't do that again for the next 45 minutes. Okay? That way you don't pile a lie on top of a... Okay? Because you're not going to be able to do it all the time. Okay? You're just not capable of it. You can't do it. Okay? If it's something like an abortion, you can say, I'll never be involved with that again in my whole life. And that you can decide. Okay? But if it's mental, it's like, I won't be jealous of that lady for half an hour. Okay? And then you just watch your mind carefully for half an hour. That destroys the old bad karma. Okay? That's the main thing that destroys the old bad karma. Okay? You can destroy old bad karmic seeds just by deciding that for a certain amount of time I won't do that again. Okay? And here's the last part. And then we'll take a break. I'll do X to make up for it. It's called Nyamokundu Jubeto. Okay? I'll do X to make up for what I did. Okay? I have a good friend. He's Mongolian. I told you the story a lot. I like it. He was in Vietnam. This is very typical. Some guy shows up from Mongolia in the 1968 or something, and the American government drafts him within 3 months. He gets a green card, then he gets his draft notice. Okay? He goes to the Army Training Center. They say, you've got bad teeth. He says, okay, give me some false teeth. It's okay. They said, we'll tell you what, we'll pull out your teeth and we'll give you false teeth when you get back. Because if you get shot with false teeth in your mouth, you'll choke on them. So they pull out half his teeth and they put him on a steamer to Da Nang, you know. And then he's like in the jungle for 3 years. And he says, you know, I was in this ambush and we got ambushed and I was spraying the jungle with machine gun fire. I don't know if I hit anybody or not. So he comes to my lama. He says, what should I do? This is Chinila's brother, okay? And Rinpoche says, I'll tell you what. Mongolians love sheep meat, right? He says, yeah, we love it. We'd do anything for sheep meat. He says, I happen to know that your father is keeping 2 sheep in his backyard with the intention of killing them to eat, right? He says, yeah, I know. So he says, I want you to buy those 2 sheep from your father and keep them until they die. Okay. And that's your makeup activity. You see what I mean? That's number 4. It's a symbolic act to make up for what you did. Okay. Do you know how long the stupid sheep live? You see, you never find out because you always kill them after a year or two, right? This thing lasted 15 years. This sheep lasted 15 years. It was a boy and a girl sheep. It's very beautiful because one died on like a Tuesday and then the other one died of a broken heart like on Thursday. It was so unbelievable. It was really weird. You know, he's kind of half hoping they'll die for 15 years. And then you know, I think he got attached to them after a while. And then they died together in the same week. It was very sweet. Anyway, that's a very extreme one. Okay, I mean, most lamas would say, go volunteer at a hospital for 6 months, maybe once a week, you know, and dedicate it to that abortion you had or something like that. Okay, something like that. Do something symbolic. Buy some animals and release them, which Lama Sup is constantly doing. Okay, you know, pick up a stray dog, which Amber is constantly doing. something like that. All right, make up with it. In the scriptures, it says you could also do mantras or you could do prostrations, or you could circle around a holy place. But the number one best activity in the universe is what? Studying and meditating. And the most powerful one is to meditate on emptiness. Why? You wouldn't want to do it again. If you really understood this pen thing, you know, we got a new one. The same old cylinder. If you really understood the pen thing, if you really, really, really understood it, then you would understand that this could be Tara's arm in 6 months if you worked hard enough. You would really, really believe it. You would totally understand it. Lord Buddha in the Diamond Cutter Sutra says, you can take 1 billion planets, cover them with diamonds, and give it to an enlightened being as an offering. Compared to that, if you explain the pen thing to someone for 5 minutes, it's much more powerful, karma. Okay, why? Because it's the potential. Then you understand how to do it. You really understand how Tantra works. You really understand how to become a tantric deity. And I'm telling you, you can do it. Okay? People got mad at me in Bulgaria. Some guy came up to me, I found a scripture. It said 2 billion years, you know. It takes 2 billion years, you know. I said, you know, and I'm like, you know, he's like fighting me, you know. I'm like, no, it's not. What do you think Tantra is for? What do you think the whole point of Tantra is, you know? It's one lifetime. Okay? One lifetime. But you gotta understand the cylinder thing. You have to understand the cylinder thing, or it's impossible. Okay? You move on to this, the emptiness of the arm thing, then you're in Tantra Fat City. I mean, no problem. Very possible. And you'll see changes very fast, okay? It doesn't happen in one night, okay? It's not like you wake up and your right arm is white light and your left arm is still skinny and freckles and wrinkles and stuff. It's not like that. Very quickly, things start to change in your life. Amazing things start to happen. That's all. Very noticeably. And there comes a threshold, and you get over it. You reach that you can say, I now believe that the amazing things happening to me are because I'm keeping my book, or because I'm wiped out my... Now I get it. You know, that guy stood up in Goa at the top of the hotel and said all this stuff, and it sounded okay. And then I kept my book, and I did that weekly meditation thing, and now 6 months later, these four amazing things have happened to me. You know, like some backache I had my whole life has gone away now. Or, you know, that boy I was always thinking about asked me out. And they're playing, what's her name?
Sarah McLachlan?
Sarah McLachlan on the radio all day. You know, I mean, it's too much to be coincidence. You know, it must be because of my practice, okay? And you should get to a place like that. And then it just goes zoom, you know? All the things start accelerating. And then it gets faster and faster. Then it feels like a quick train ride. It feels like, I don't know, it feels like downhill skiing or surfing or something. And then it's just like a big party, you know, it's like a big Dharma party, and things start happening, and you're like, it's not only cool that they're happening, I know why they're happening, and I know how to keep it going. You know what I mean? That was always my goal. Ever since I took mescaline the first time when I was 20 or 18, I only took it once, really, it was unbelievable. It was in a canyon in the desert in Arizona. And then I came out and I said, I'm going to learn to do that without the mescaline. No, so it took 30 years. Okay? But you can do it. It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. Then you're like, you know, you're in control of it, you see? You can make it keep going. You see? I mean, it's great. And then eventually it leads to tantric enlightenment in this lifetime. Okay? Then you won't need the paw, which I'm going to cover after the break. Okay, so take a break. Okay, all right. Okay. Okay, we got to cruise a little bit. Say, Sunjimba.
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 Those of you who know the four powers, this is number two, destruction. But this one just means every time you start to have a selfish thought, smash him on the head. Okay, every time you start to have a selfish thought, say, no. Okay. In the Lojong Tse Gema, in the 8 verses, it's called Sendat Doni Doba Shot, means kick ass immediately. Kick him right away. The minute you start to find yourself being selfish, then just attack it right away. Don't let it go on for even a few seconds. And I'll give you the barometer. How do you know when you're being selfish? You're unhappy. Okay? That's all. Very simple. Every time you start to feel nervous or agitated or anxiety or unhappy or irritated, you are having selfishness and you are having ignorance at that moment. That's a barometer. That's how you know when it's happening. If you feel distinct emotions of unhappiness, you are having self-cherishing and you are seeing something the wrong way. Okay? That's just a indication. So then you have to do something about it. Okay? All right. Number 5. Yep. Say Munlam. You've heard of Munlam Temple, like the great prayer festival in Lhasa. Munlam means prayer. And this means when you go to bed at night, okay? This is one whole day's practice, right? And you're laid down in your bed, and you're about to fall off to sleep, and you say, I dedicate everything I did today to try to get bodhicitta, okay? Which bodhicitta? Both. How about both? Okay. Ultimate bodhicitta, which is understanding emptiness directly, seeing it directly, and then what we call deceptive bodhicitta, which is I promise to reach perfect ecstasy as quick as I can so I can show other people how to do it. And that's bodhicitta. And if that's not what you think of when I say bodhicitta, then please adjust your thinking. I'll say it again. I promise to reach total ecstasy as fast as possible so I can show other people how to do it. That's all. And all the other things you heard about bodhicitta, you know, like self-flagellation, that comes from your earlier days. Okay? That comes from your Judeo-Christian days. Okay? It's almost too good to be true. You get to eat your cake and have it too. Okay? I promise to be perfectly happy so I can show other people how to do it. Okay? And that is bodhicitta. And you don't have to get nailed up on a cross or anything. Okay. Although it may be useful at some points. Okay.
Session 6 continues on the next CD.